This is Hidden Killers Live with Tony Bruschi and Robin Dree.
I thought we could stop talking about this guy a long time ago, but apparently not. Brian Koberger now says, it wasn't me. It was somebody else. It wasn't me. I've been railroaded. My attorney sucked. And he's looking for the last lever to pull, and he has essentially pulled it. Brian Koberger, as you may remember, stood in an Ada County courtroom and said the word guilty four separate times, one for each of the University of Idaho students he admitted taking the lives of. 13 months later, he's now filed to take it all back. And somehow in his mind, he thinks that just writing this out on a piece of paper and calling the New York Times is what's going to do it. Well, we're certainly talking about it, aren't we? Whether or not that actually means anything legally is a whole other conversation. Writing that his actual innocence is his truth. His truth. I love it when people have their truths. Joining us to break all of this down, psychotherapist Siobhan Scott, who spent her career inside how people build and rebuild the stories they tell about themselves. And that sentence is where we are starting. Robin Drake, retired FBI special agent, chief of the Counterintelligence Behavioral Analysis Program. Also with us, hi, I'm Tony. I'm a podcaster. That's my credentials.
I just love Siobhan on Wednesdays. Yeah. she wraps us in the greatest blanket of understanding of others.
So do I. This is one of my most favorite conversations of the week.
And we need her today for the darkness we're covering. Thank God we're covering Koberger first. Give us a little lightness of idiocy and some jocularity from the moron he is before we move on to horrendous pain.
Obviously, it's all horrendous pain. But at this point, Koberger is almost just laughable with the things that come out of his mouth. It's like if there's anything left out of this, it's comic relief from an idiot. And in a little bit, we're also going to talk about Lindsey Clancy as well, and where that case is at in the trial, and it will bring us all down before we continue our day.
Yeah, most of these cases, we always got to make sure we give props and compassion to the victims of Koberger, right? But 1,000%. At the same time, though, and he kind of grabbed the spotlight, and you mentioned this in one of your pieces, Tony. From the streaming that was coming out talking about the victims, but I do like that he's putting himself back up there for the Gonsalveses to go at him again, because anytime they can take some swings at him, I think it's good.
He kind of put a string back on his head and put on the pinata costume and went back up. It's like, okay. Like
you take it on the wrong family, brother.
Yeah. Let's look at how he worded it, because, this is not necessarily, we're not talking about the legalities or anything. We're talking about the brain behind this, how he got to calling the New York Times and writing this letter. That's what I'm really curious about. He wrote that his actual innocence is his truth. That's part of the verbiage that he used, and all sorts of verbiage, and we'll get into that in a little bit too. That's a man building a room to stand in. So which are we dealing with here, Siobhan? A liar that's trying to run a play on this? Or is this a man who has genuinely rewritten the file in his own head, and he believes that he didn't do this?
Could be some of both. I seriously doubt that he has convinced himself he didn't do it. But my guess is he's crafting a story that makes him feel better about himself. And it's obviously BS. But in some way, it allows him some sense of comfort, some sense of, well, it wasn't really my fault I did it, or these other factors weren't looked at. And, of course, to those of us who can look at the objective truth, that's absurd, but it's all self-serving. The guy is hyper-focused on details. We know that he had all these obsessive tendencies. And is he trying to pull that in? Because it gives him a sense of control. And he does, clearly, being locked up the way he is, he doesn't have a lot of control over things. Mm-hmm. And so this is meeting some kind of psychological need for him to feel important, to be in control again. And it gets him attention, which, these kind of guys love attention.
Except from his cellmates. Siobhan, what I'm curious about, if this plays into it at all, with his, again, we don't know because we haven't seen any kind of testing or anything, but he's got the observable behaviors and traits of high levels of psychopathy. I think you agreed with that. I'm curious because we've seen so many things he's done throughout the course of the trial, the things we learned about him before that. This individual is an extreme copycat. You know, he studied all the serial killers before. It looks like a lot of the methods, tools, and techniques he used were copied from others. That's why we even came up with our theory that he secreted his, made a cache of his things he used afterwards and probably had it secreted before as well, you know, copying other serial killers that did that before. So my conjecture on this, and I'm curious your thoughts on it, was this letter that was written, and he's been noted before of being a horrendous writer. He's not a good writer. And I'm curious if that's because he's got a bad memory, because he seems to like consume information and try to regurgitate it. Because he really, I haven't seen him, I'm curious if you've seen him, have an original thought. He seems to take in information and try to regurgitate it back out, but he does such a horrible job at it. I really think that's why he's such a bad writer, because he can't remember things very well. Because this kind of goes to everyone says, you know, oh, he was, you know, he's a smart guy, he's a PhD. No, I think he's a horrendous. I think he's a horrendous individual. I don't think he's got any intelligence. I think he just had a lot of obsessive compulsive behavior that allowed him to do okay enough to keep moving on. But yeah. Are you seeing that as well?
Yeah, I think that's a really good supposition. There's a lot of copying going on and copying other people. He's not an original thinker in any way. He's role-playing in essence. Mm-hmm. And I think, yes, definitely we can use the word psychopath. And we can also use the word, he's either, you know, they threw out the diagnosis of autistic, that would fit, but also schizoid personality would fit, which is a different but similar kind of diagnosis, which can make someone come off very weird and idiosyncratic. So yeah, I think the copying and not integrating with the whole piece, you know, because mm-hmm. it's just you're getting bits and pieces of stories from him. What story is he latching onto now?
It's even like his writing. Like his writing is very disjointed, like you said. It's bits and pieces that he's kind of remembering and thinking he's got to put it here. He's yeah. trying to mirror and copy what he thinks it needs to be because he heard it someplace and he's making it here. Yeah, makes a lot of sense. And we're gonna. I'm trying to keep track. I got to make a Siobhan dictionary of all the cool words you come up with.
Well, I mean, there's a lot. I have a lot of questions here. I mean, and there's a couple points you made there, Robin. I want to point to of him copying things, because the first thing I thought of, like, oh, who's he copying this round? Where he's making this, it wasn't me. I've started to look, and there's a litany. I mean, there's a laundry list of people who've pled guilty and then tried to take it back, or have been convicted and tried to take it back. That's nothing new. But what I found kind of striking in the writing of this document that he threw up into the world, he uses the words broken plea, which is the title of the mm-hmm. one book that came out that is filled with misinformation and unchecked facts and just a bunch of shit. It was a really not well done book, in my opinion. But clearly he latched onto it because yes. it's the one piece of writing that came out that was in his corner and the pro burgers could go, "Ooh, this is something." That I found very interesting, that he's latching onto someone else's narrative and going, oh, I'm going to go down this road. So that was very funny. But you have all the words to describe him, you know, psychopathic, schizoid personality. What do you call the folks who look at all the evidence against Brian Koberger, the stunning amount of evidence against Brian Koberger? They don't absorb any of it. They find excuses for it, or they just don't absorb the extent of the truth. They just kind of stop at certain facts and don't take in the rest. And then they say, see, this is proof of something. No, you just didn't take in the rest of their information. Mm-hmm. What do you call those folks? Is there a name for that?
Flat earthers. Sorry.
Yeah. I mean, you're right up there. I mean, are they that different than Brian Koberger, I guess?
Yeah, the first thought that comes to my mind is deluded and driven by emotion. And I've often called folks that latch on to people like this, it's almost like they're basking in the dark glow, you know? They get a sense of importance.
Basking in a dark glow.
Yeah, yeah. Because, you know, when people have their heroes, wonderful people in the world, they kind of attach to them. They follow them all the time. They write them letters. And they're kind of basking in the glow of the famous person. I have a connection to them. But this is people who are attracted to this dark side and attracted to the dark glow. You know, there are still communities online with young people who have latched on to the Columbine killers and are saying that, you know, they were victims and it's all justified and aggrandizing them and falling in love with them. When it's the women who fall in love with them, if we want to call it love, right, they develop this bizarre attachment. We even have a term for it, hybristophilia. And these
say that word again, Siobhan.
Hybristophilia. H-A-I-B-R-I-S-T-O-P-H-I-L-I-A.
Hybristophilia.
Oh my God.
Yeah, yeah.
Your brain's so big.
I want to start using that in sentences.
I actually had that one taped to my monitor for a long time because I wanted to integrate spelling it right.
I just keep adding more stickies all over mine.
Yeah.
You should do a spelling contest and who can spell that correctly.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, that would be fun. A forensic spelling contest, right?
here's the weird thing I'm encountering with the Brian Koberger case. In my normal life of people that there's people in my world that I trust that seem to have education, living a normal, healthy life for the most part, as far as I can tell. But I've heard from some people, one of them a psychotherapist, that, you know, they believe Koberger is innocent. They give me the laundry list of why they think he's innocent. I can easily debunk 95% of the points that are made. But I've seen someone that has gone as far as writing Brian Koberger, a psychotherapist. Writing Brian Koberger, believing in his innocence, and that there's a voice out there for him, or there's people out there that believe in him. What the hell is that?
What the hell?
What the hell is that?
I would love to have a conversation with a therapist who thinks that way.
I'll hook you up if you want.
Please do.
My reaction was, and you used to manage my meds, and they no longer do.
Explains a lot.
That horrifies me. That really
it horrified
does.
Me when I had the guy. I'm like, what? Like, wow.
And that's when Tony had hair, and then all of a sudden his hair is
gone. I blame that. But I mean, but there's a lot of people out there like that. I mean, and I'm not trying to say it, you know, insultingly, but it's some of the folks who are thinking that he's innocent or that he's somehow been railroaded. I mean, they're not necessarily the tinfoil wearing hat people. I mean, that you typically see on things like this. What is that? Is that because there's more of a community environment that exists in our world today, and it's easier for people who are not going to do the research themselves just to kind of fall into and jump into that narrative that otherwise, you know, wouldn't, where it just used to be kind of tinfoil wearing hat people over here? What is that? Why is it that you have seemingly healthy thinking normal folks in every other aspect of life somehow feeling like this about this case?
It's open to speculation. The only thing I can guess is that, you know, they may do a really adequate job of masking their bizarre thoughts.
True.
And smart people can have really strange, I mean, we still have MDs who come out and say COVID wasn't a real thing, you know, and yet they're practicing medicine. And, you know, despite all the evidence and all the people who died from it, you know, you can find people who appear to be normal and high functioning, but they've got, we can just say, some screws loose inside.
Yeah. Can some of that happen because, I mean, when people get triggered from traumatic events earlier in life and you have trauma responses, can some of these things be from trauma responses earlier in life that they just can't seem to overcome or are unaware of? And part of it also then be like we've been talking about, the notoriety part of it is like, hey, look, I'm going to get attention because, you know, I'm saying goofy things or I'm aligning myself with someone horrendous and I'm going to stand on this hill and die because it's so righteous, even though it might not matter so much about the hill they're on. They're just everyone's seeing them on the hill.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there could be trauma. There could be personality factors. It could be that they have something in the past where they were accused of something that they didn't do. And so they're kind of projecting out there and seeing, you know, that they're always going to go for the underdog, or they may have a fantasy of saving him in some way. It would be a really interesting book to write, in-depth interviews with those folks and try to get into what's going on in here.
Yeah, because I've done stuff like that on people that try to shine up to the serial killers behind bars. I know they've interviewed a lot of them or look at the research behind it. But even just people that kind of support, you know, on the peripheries without even getting that close, that just subscribe. Again, the only thing I can think of is that's why it popped in my mind is flat earthers, man. I mean, there's just a group of people that refuse to accept evidence at face value and just will dismiss it. Again, such massive levels of confirmation bias is just unbelievable.
Is that refusal, though, Siobhan, or is that incapability?
That's another good question.
Yeah, good question. It may be both, depending on the person. And some people really have this thing about the underdog and that the system is out to get people. And this may come from their own history in some way. And this sense of I've got to rescue people who have been victimized. So.
Sure. And at its core, that's a good thing, to help people that have been victimized. Mm-hmm. But not everybody's a victim.
No. So
that's the thing. And a lot of people will play the victim card to get sympathy and empathy from people who are too readily available to dish out that empathy. And once you get burned so many times, you learn. But I guess maybe there's just some people who haven't been burned enough and they're still dishing it out.
Yeah.
You know, and with too big of a spoon.
And misplaced empathy is predominant, I think, in certain portions of the culture. You know, I read a lot of stuff, and sometimes from other clinicians who are saying every serial killer has been an abuse victim. Not true.
Yeah, not true. Yeah.
I don't believe Brian Koberger as a child. I don't believe his parents were abusive.
No, I don't think so either.
Did he get teased in school? Sure. But most of us have red hair. You get tortured in school, right?
Mm-hmm. Boys with the name Robin, yes.
Yeah, I'll bet. See? And I don't think that accounts. I don't think it makes current sense with what we know, that every person, you know, the old saying, hurt people hurt people. No, sometimes psychopaths who were born that way hurt people. And it's misplaced empathy. And I find myself online having that argument a lot with people who just don't get it.
It's interesting, Siobhan, because as we're talking about it, what popped in my head is so I'm going to go glass half full on people like this, because they are full of empathy. They want to help. They want to be there for someone that was disenfranchised from their context. But what they seem to lack is an ability to have discernment, you know, because empathy plus action is compassion, and that's what they're trying to do. But misplaced empathy, like you said, is a lack of this being able to discern who actually is broken and who is actually, you know, deserving of your compassion. Right. You know, so how does someone not develop discernment, I guess, at some point in life?
I think it's a combination of just consuming bad information, you know, pop culture information, and not looking deeper. I often find that when I point out more data that there's a lot I could talk about all that, but just the gist of it is that we have a lot of bad information bopping around the culture, and people may read and they read it over and over again and they just swallow it. They don't look deeper and they don't know how to look deeper.
Right. Or want to.
I want to talk a little bit about the verbiage in the letter. He called the state's case a myopic narrative work of fiction. He pulled out the thesaurus from the prison library. He wrote that justice was circumnavigated. I don't even think that's the right word to use in that sentence. This is a criminology PhD writing about his own murder conviction. And he's reaching, like I said, for the prison thesaurus. That vocabulary in his whole letter, if you read the whole damn thing, it's just filled with like, ooh, this will be a word. Like he went on spell check and put it like on max. Mm-hmm. The vocabulary that he's using in this thing. What does that tell you about what he's getting out of this writing, why he's writing that way, who he's writing to? What did you see? What was your reaction to that letter?
Yeah, look how smart and superior I am. You know, I'm going to use these million-dollar words that none of you are going to understand. And again, I'm above everybody. And it also lets me know, how did he talk his way into a PhD program? You know, because they love the verbiage like that. And that says a lot about him and how he's bumped himself up in the academia. Yeah.
And he hasn't gotten any better. I remember at some point we've seen his writing samples from before, and or I don't know if we actually saw his writing samples, but we saw the notes and we also saw the notes he made on students' papers as well.
Yeah,
it's just like this. It's a word salad of words that he's trying to piece together because he just can't communicate as a human being. Because again, using that word human being in him, it's incongruent. There's no human in there. It is a conglomeration of, as I said before, of genetic goo, because it's just nothing's coming together to be able to communicate as a human being communicates. It just is, and this is just another writing sample of it. It just, his arc is flat. You know, we talk about life arcs. I do a lot of time, I know, and I always say pass is prologue with a lot of people. And I've been told, you know, well, we're different today than we are yesterday. And yes, everyone is on a path of learning. Some people are parabolic, some people are flat, you know, but still linear, you know, going upwards. He is flat. There is no new data. There's no new growth going on in there. This is because the way he was a couple years ago is the way he is now. This is just completely lack of anything. I mean, he's still battling for better bananas like he was when he was 5 years old, it looks like.
It's nuts. Your thoughts in the comment section on Substack and YouTube as we continue this conversation. Those links are in the description.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast.